Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, we are back once again talking money, and today we're going to do a great show. It's going to be for those that want to be an entrepreneur. You know, when you start out in business, it's scary. And so we're going to have a little talk about that. But, you know, when I think about money problems, one of the things that I always look at is, are you making any money? And, you know, when I look at through, there's really kind of three places that I look to try to help people move forward financially. The first one is their income. And so the first money problem is you don't make any money. And, I mean, that seems to be obvious, but, that is one of them. The second one is you don't know what to do with your money. Then lastly, you have no plan of action, so you kind of float along. And so, when I think about doing that, the first step, if you're going to ever get ahead, is you got to find something that you would do for free. I have people all the time, they'll ask me things like, how did you do this? I said, well, I found something I like to do, and I got good at it, all right, and became an expert at it. And then over time after that, I monetized it by becoming an owner. And so the first step is let's solve the income problem. If you are disliking or you wake up dreading Sunday night because Monday's starting, then you got to change. The second thing is lack of financial education. As we talk on the show all the time, you've got to understand what you don't know will hurt you. And typically the average cost in a lifetime of mistakes is between $50,000 and $500,000. And so if you go make a bad decision, maybe you don't fully fund your 401k, or maybe I see people that don't even take advantage of the matching funds of their 401k, or they're, buying cars they can't afford. It goes all down that. Or maybe they're too aggressive or too conservative. It ends up costing them. So we build a defense to keep us from losing and an offense to move forward. And then, as I've always said, you automate. And how do you automate? You automate by just setting aside X amount of dollars. When I first got started, going on 40 years ago, I remember setting up my $50 a month mutual fund that got pulled out of my checking account. And I've been doing that for 40 years. And so every time it's automated, I don't have to think about it. And I would always try to stay broke in my checking account, put a little cash in my pocket so I didn't feel broke, and then save money. And then lastly, get a plan. And that's to so you have a plan to move forward, and that's your GPS. And so today what we're going to do, we're going to go down the path of fixing the income problem to start with. And I've got three guests on here that are business owners. And the good news, I started thinking about it. If I add your ages up, okay, you're close to mine. How about that? All right. And so I've got Eden and Victoria, and I got Josh on here. And they have put together their we got behavioral, right, Josh. I mean, tell them what you do here. I mean, are you going to help my people figure out how to think a little bit when it comes to being emotional and all that? What all do you do? Tell us your background.
Yeah. So, well, I say I grew up as a financial advisor before going out on my own. And Roy, when I went out on my own, it was literally I sold my house in order to rent a room in the upstairs of another friend's room just to make, because I was starting with zero.
You were broke.
I wasn't broke, but I was ready to invest in my business because I'd started making money, but I could only make so much. And so I sold my house in order to reduce my expenses. That way I could really invest in myself and build a business from zero. So I became a financial advisor for myself, built that business, ended up selling it, taking over another firm that that had some issues and needed to be turned around. I got that growing again and then sold that firm. So I've built a couple of businesses. And since then, I've gone back to school after building those businesses and got a PhD in behavioral finance. Gotcha. And that's really the psychology of money. We make so many predictable mistakes with money. It's almost like our brains are wired to make to make certain types of mistakes. And
it's like the only time, the only product in the world that goes on sale nobody wants is the stock market.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
I mean, as soon as it goes down, we don't want anything to do with it. Let's pay when it's high.
You'll appreciate this, Roy. When during COVID, I was working with advisors, and I had advisors calling me and saying, "Hey, everybody's wanting to sell all this stock and mutual funds and ETFs." And I said, "Well, what's in there?" So we started looking at the top holdings, and I'm like, "Okay, so
would you buy toilet paper stock right now? Would you like to own some toilet paper stock? Oh, yeah, everybody wants to buy toilet paper. You can't even find toilet paper on the shelves. And I was like, well, then why would you sell toilet paper stock? Because this stock right here, this stock and this is where toilet paper comes from. Yeah. This is going to come back. This is on sale. If you've got extra cash, invest in toilet paper. But you don't see that when you just look at the name of a stock, right? So, you know, that just that education of understanding, hey, I'm feeling emotions right now. They are clouding my short-term emotional goals,
right?
They cloud up what I really need to do for the long term.
Yeah, and I think when COVID hit the market, I went on and I said, you know, it's like the average up from a 20% down over the next year is like 72%. I think it was up about 90%, that kind of deal. Okay, so we got Josh. He's the guy that's going to make us think right, all right? And then we've got our AIs, and so they're going to talk about how we match make the best advisor to the people that you can relate to. So, Eden, you want to start? Tell a little bit about this. Is for those of you, Finney, F-I-N-N-Y, you can check it out. Cool stuff. And they're going to talk a little bit about AI, and then we're going to get into how they got their business started. So, Eden.
Yeah, so Finney is a startup that Victoria and I started a little over a year ago. We were both 25 years old at the time when we started this company, and it was super exciting. We use AI to help match financial advisors with people that they can help achieve their financial goals, and it's super exciting. It's been a crazy journey, so excited to get into it.
Yeah, so what we're going to do, they went out into the VC market, for the sake of it, raise money. So, Victoria, what about it?
Yeah, well, Eden and I both left pretty comfortable jobs, right? So Eden was at BCG at the time. I was a product manager at Uber. But we looked at each other and we said, you know what? We're not getting any younger. Our salaries are only going to keep growing. The golden handcuffs are real. Now is the time to take a big risk, a big swing, bet on ourselves.
Right.
And we were lucky enough to actually get into this program called Y Combinator, which has, from which a lot of really notable companies have graduated, such as Airbnb, DoorDash, Coinbase, a bunch of them. And we were very lucky to be selected. And that was really what spearheaded, you know, the fundraise, got us going. We moved out to San Francisco to be, you know, immersed in the tech ecosystem for a couple months. And really, it was during these months that we iterated on our prototype, got it out into the world, got some great feedback, and raised a subsequent of $4.3 million after that.
All right. So what we're going to do today, as we go into the break, we're going to be talking about starting businesses. Visit RoyMatlockJr.com. You'll be able to listen to this interview on the podcast. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, we're back. Roy Matlock, and today's show, if you're just tuning in, we are talking about the top side, which is how do you go out and go from maybe something where you're not happy and you want to take a risk and you want to go in business and you want to do stuff to raise your income? I've always believed this, that, you know, your income, it's real simple. How do you budget? Well, you budget on half of what you make and you save 25% of it and you give the IRS 25% of it. And then how do you know what your lifestyle should be? Well, just raise your income, spend half of it, have 25% being put aside, and you move forward. But how do you raise your income? You got to be more valuable. You got to always improve your value proposition. One of the things that I've always done as far as going in and you know, looking at my business is I start the year off every year, and this is something that is a different way of looking at it. I said, well, what was my revenue last year? And I look at my revenue, and then I say, well, let's eliminate all the expenses. So now I have my revenue and no expense. Which ones am I going to hire back? All right. Which ones do I not want to hire back? Knowing what I know about this employee now that I've let them go in my mind, would I rehire them back? All right. And that's kind of the way I do on my personal finances. I say, well, now I've got this much income. Would I rehire these expenses back? And so then you start grow. You get a mindset of a profit and loss on your life, of your time, and you always run a profit. Then you say, well, how do I grow my income? You know, am I going to go to my boss and say, give me a raise? And they're like, why? You know, and so then you start moving into the business mindset. So with that, Edden, let's start with you. Tell us about how Finney got moving and what you and Victoria did and what the risk was and just an overall view of what you guys are doing.
Yeah, maybe I can start with a bit of background, both of our backgrounds. So both Victoria and I studied computer science and engineering in college and then took pretty traditional risk-averse life paths. And so the ones that would make our parents proud. And so we both studied, went to good universities. She went to Stanford. I went to McGill in Montreal. And then I went to join a consulting firm called Boston Consulting Group. I moved to New York. I joined their private equity team. So on paper, I was doing everything right. I had followed the path. I studied hard, got a good job, moved to New York on my own, and was working incredibly hard. When I was at Boston Consulting Group, I was probably working 80-hour weeks.
Yep.
Was doing that for over 2 years, and I was learning so much. They call that a working MBA. So I just felt like I was really just getting it was the best possible place for someone to be in their younger 20s right out of school. But then after about 2 years, I took a step back and I said, I'm working so hard. I had no time to do anything with family, with friends, and I was totally fine making that sacrifice. But I said, if I'm working this hard, I'd like to work this hard for myself.
Right.
Right. I'd like to be my own boss. And if I how can I increase my personal income where I'm not totally dependent on other people and I can actually be the boss of my own finances? And so I was given this job opportunity. This big financial advisory firm actually tried to hire me out of BCG to come work in-house for them and solve a problem that I had noticed amongst a lot of advisors. And it was the fact that they had a hard time growing organically. So that just meant that they had a hard time bringing on new clients. And so this one firm was offering to pay me a ton of money, honestly, to come work for them and fix this problem in-house. But then I realized I can do that, but I'd just be facing the same problem that I'm facing right now, which is I'm still, you know, working for somebody else and working incredibly hard. And not being in control of my own path.
Right.
And so I probably did the riskiest thing that I could have at the time, and I quit my cushy job in New York. I turned down this pretty big job offer, and I decided to start a company on my own to solve this problem that I had perceived to be a pretty big problem.
Right.
And listen, when I tell you, it was a very big risk. Like, I didn't have a massive safety net at the time. My parents definitely were, are you sure you want to give this up? Like, on paper, I was on a pretty good life path, but I just wanted to take a bit of more control and take a different risk. And that's what I did. And not long after that, I brought in Victoria, and she can kind of tell you her story.
And you know, one of the things, too, that a lot of times, in your case, you took the risk. We're in a state, it's called a right-to-work state. And a right-to-work state says that we don't have to give you any reason to let you go. We just don't like you, so you're fired, that kind of deal. And a lot of people are out there at risk in what they think is their guaranteed job. Mm-hmm. And especially as we're moving into, the economic times that we're in right now, it's a lot of uncertainty and things like that. And so sometimes if you don't take a risk, that's the risk. You know, that you're involved in. And so anyway, so Victoria, all right, a little bit more.
Yeah. Essentially, what Ed and I both realize is exactly that the biggest risk is not taking a risk, right? And the fact that at Uber, I was essentially at the mercy constantly of politics, right? Or how the market was doing. Someone else was in the driver's seat. And, like, that's just not the case with our own company. People look at us and think we're doing the riskiest thing, but in reality, we are in control of our own destiny. And I think for me, to echo what was just said, the biggest realization was I work so hard, and instead of getting promoted faster and faster, I just get penalized, quote unquote, for my efficiency. I get given more work at the same salary. They're not going to, all of a sudden name me the CEO of Uber. And ultimately, what I was really honest with myself about was that the only job at Uber that would make me really excited would be the founder or CEO job. And that was so out of reach, and there was so not a path to that role, that I decided the only way to manifest my dream would be to start something of my own and really be in control of my own destiny.
Right. And when you start thinking about that, I meet with so many business owners from everything out there. I was playing golf one time, and this guy, he had a jet. And I was like, what do you do? And he says, rags. I said, rags? He said, yeah. He says, rags. He said, I sell rags. I said, what do you mean you sell rags? He says, every business uses rags. He says, you go to a restaurant, they're cleaning the tables of rags. He said, I got the biggest rag distributorship in the country.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? And it's like you run into these people that have all – but what they did is they took the risk, and once you take a risk and if you prepare yourself, which is what you guys did, the risk is really not that great. I mean, I've been doing what I've never had a job. All right. I mean, the good news is I didn't have a good degree or anything. So I had bad grades at an easy college. All right. And so I didn't have anybody beating the doors down saying, oh, can you come be the president of our company or anything like that? I knew that I had to go find it on my own. So Josh, what about you?
Background?
Well, we talked a little bit, yeah. But I mean, from your standpoint, you've had more time with these guys. What do you see out with what they're doing?
Yeah, one of the things I'd say that first of all drew me to them was the risk taking. I mean, that's something that I had to make that choice as well. Is I'm in a nice corporate job, I have a good corporate job, I'm making good money, but I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do and really reach that. And so I saw very smart individuals being willing to take a risk. And they were coming into an industry where they didn't personally have experience in the wealth management industry,
right.
But they had great ideas and they were focused on a very big problem.
Right.
I think that's probably something that I should talk about for a second, just how big of a problem this is, because if you're trying, if we're trying to increase, to make a big jump in our career, big jump in our net worth. The bigger the problem you're trying to solve, the more opportunity you have to grow and to go in that direction. So am I running out of time here?
No, you're all okay. Good, man. You keep rolling. You're good. We got about – yeah, we're going to go into a break in about 20, 30 seconds.
Okay.
So we're all right. You'll hear it.
Okay. So, the break is it's got me.
Spooked, you're all right. Here's what we're going to be back. And really, I think the point of all is – if you can appeal to the masses, you become one of the classes. And that's the answer to the big problem. Go find the big problem and solve it. And then you become very wealthy and you're able to do stuff. We're going to be right back. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. Visit roymatlockjr.com and download some of our free resources.
Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit roymatlockjr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
So we are in segment three, and if you're just tuning in, give you a brief recap. We've got... this show is about being an entrepreneur and raising your income and solving problems. You know, the bigger the problem, the more people you solve problems for, you make a lot of money. That's really kind of the way it works. I mean, my mindset has always been, you know, solve their financial problems and I will get compensated. And I've felt that way all along that, you know, if I can educate you, the listener, you can make good decisions. And so... but there's two parts of moving forward. One is you got to get your income up. You got to find a way to grow your income. And in a lot of cases, it may be a side hustle to start, or you have an idea. But what you want to do is you want to get involved in a way that the outcome to your customer is so great that they basically can't live without you. All right. And when you do that, what happens is you get compensated. And so I'm always thinking about, I analyze businesses all the time. I'm one of these that I'll walk into a business and I'm like, this is not going to work. You know, I just immediately, that's in my head. But then other ones, I see this incredible customer service and the product they deliver and all that. And so today what we're doing, I've got some guests on, which I normally never have. And they are doing what I believe to be one of the coolest startup tech platforms out there in the financial world. And so Let's talk about when you start your business. And maybe I'll start with Victoria. People, when they try to go in business for themselves, first off, you got to get an idea. And then you got to sell yourself on the idea. And you got to do a little research. And then you got to go find some money. Walk through you and Eden, how you guys did that kind of stuff.
I think the hardest thing that people rarely talk about is not the 0 to 1 of a business, but what happens before that, right? So how do you get an idea? How do you pick the right co-founder? How do you know that your idea has legs? We were very lucky that Eden, while she was at BCG, she did a lot of work with wealth managers and really understood a gap in the market, which was that these people really, really need other ways to grow outside of referrals. And yet when you look at their tech stack, there really isn't any good solution out there. So we immediately, you know, knew that that was something to further explore. But what really sold us was the more we spoke to our potential users, the more we realized that this was in fact something they wanted. The whole Y Combinator motto, which is a program we were part of, was make something people want. So
explain Y Combinator.
Yeah. So Y Combinator is this quite prestigious accelerator that accepts around 200 companies per batch. You move out to San Francisco. They give you an initial set of funding, $500,000, in exchange for 7% of your company at first. And then at the end of the program, you have the opportunity to raise more capital. So you present your product, your progress, your revenue numbers to a set of potential investors. It really, you know, puts you on the map in that sense. And through that process is how we raise a total of $4.3 million.
Okay, so you go out there, you had a bunch of people wanting this $500,000, all right, and you were able to get through that, and they said, yeah, your idea's good. And then from there, you progressed, and then you picked up more money, investors, and these are tech. This is a tech product, which what are the percentages of tech things that blow up? A lot. All right. But now you've narrowed it down. You got the money and you raised more money. So that's positive. All right. So you did that. How much time did you guys put in getting prepared to go to that, to get your 500?
Y Combinator process. So it all happened really quickly. The applications are open for about a month. You apply it first online and then they follow up only for a certain percentage, I believe around 7%. Of applicants get an interview, which is very short. It's only 10 minutes, rapid fire questions, grill you on the spot, and you hear back from them pretty immediately.
So a real Shark Tank, like on the...
Pretty much.
Yeah, just to add to that, since in the last year now I've gone on panels and speakers and conferences and all these things, and I have never been more nervous than that 10-minute interview for Y Combinator. It feels like Shark Tank, except it's two of them, me and Victoria and our third co-founder, and they're just rapid firing questions. And it's questions like, why do you think this is a big company? We don't like this idea. What, do you have any other ideas? And it's really just testing you to see how you act under pressure. It was yep. quite scary.
Very cool. Very cool. So Josh, what's some questions that need to be answered when somebody's starting a business?
I'd say probably the first thing is, why am I doing this? Why this particular idea? You got to be passionate about it. You are going to get punched in the face. Someone's going to tell you no. Someone's going to make you feel like it's stupid. There's people that are in your crowd that you'd think that would be supportive of you, and they're suspicious. So if you're not passionate about this and you don't know why you're doing it, and it's just my idea of the month, you need to put that idea in your own boxing ring, beat it up, make sure it can take a punch. Because at the end of the day, entrepreneurship is not about how hard you can swing. It's much more like a Rocky movie of how hard yep. you can get punched and just stay in the ring. So the first thing is this something that you're passionate about? And the second thing I've asked myself is this a big enough problem?
Right.
Because the bigger the problem, the bigger the solution, the bigger the payout, the more it hurts. Who does this hurt? You don't start with what I want to do. That's a big mistake, people, because what do I want to do? What do I want to do with my life? No. Your success is going to depend on your ability to solve other people's problems. So who are the people you're solving for? Do they have the money? Do they see that it's a problem? Do they already recognize that it's a problem? Because if they don't recognize the problem, you've just increased your sales cycle dramatically. If they're problem aware, if they're already aware of the problem and there's not an adequate solution. That's exactly what these young ladies found out is, there's a big problem in wealth management, not just from the advisor side, but also from the client side.
Yeah, the client is wanting to meet with somebody that they relate to.
Yes.
You know, I mean, and that's one of the things we'll talk toward on the last segment, maybe how this all works. But, you know, something you brought up, I always would ask people, how much money do your neighbors make?
Mm-hmm.
And they would look at me kind of funny like they didn't know. I said, well, they make the same amount of money you do because that's why they're your neighbors. If they go and raise their income dramatically, I mean, if you were to take what you're earning now and make 10 times what you were making, do you think you might buy another house? And you're like, yeah. So what happens is sometimes they don't want you to win.
Yeah.
You know, because they're thinking, man, you know, they're jealous, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you don't want to do this, you want to do that, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I grew up, my dad started a company. He was in the Navy and he was a welder. And he came back from the war and started a welding shop, which mm-hmm. ended up becoming a manufacturing company and had 400 employees, manufactured from, you know, nothing to 55-foot trucks, you know, and stuff like that. And we never knew anything different than to do a risk. So then my brother's got his own company, and we just all are like, this is what we do. And so, but I think a lot of people, they don't want you to succeed. And they are going to, you know, the average American is told, get a good job, get a college degree, open a savings account. That's what they tell you.
Yeah.
All right. And then what happens? You become what? Oh, you got to have a good, you got to build your credit so you can go in debt. All right. And so then you wake up one day and you're like, hang on a second. No, I don't like this. I want to do something different. And so if you're out there right now, we're going to talk about some cool, let's talk about when we come back, how this stuff works that you do and what, you know, because all of this ChatGPT and everything that's going along, it just blows my mind, you know, how you can do things and save, I don't know how many hours. You know, I know for me, it's a lot of hours. But what we're doing today, it's a little different show. It's the Money and Business Hour. And we talk about today how to go start a business. And I would encourage you, go to RoyMatlockJr.com. We have a referral partner program where you can actually start a business with me. In the financial business. And so stay tuned with us. One more segment. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Roy Matlock Jr. Money and Business Hours, where he'll help you fix your finances once and for all. To reach Roy, call 615-843-2999. That is 615-843-2999, or visit RoyMatlockJr.com. Now, here's your host, Roy.
All right, we're finishing up our segment on becoming an entrepreneur, and I want to encourage you to visit RoyMatlockJr.com. There's a lot of things that we can help you when it comes to your money, but one of the big things you can do is also visit and sign up for the podcast so you can get to hear the show over and over and over again because there's a lot of good information on it. And we also have an opportunity where you can listen to our replay of our A to Z of Personal Finance, which is on there as well. And we did that just several months ago. It's actually almost 3 hours. And when I say A to Z, it's A to Z of everything to help you get your money going in the right direction. I also have my best retirement workbook. How about that? 12 pages you can download, fill it in yourself, and learn how to get your money going in the right direction. So with that, let's talk about now, you know, this is you know, the cool thing, you know, we hear about AI. What do you guys do, Ed? How does your stuff work and how does this AI help people in business?
Yeah, so AI is this term that gets passed around a lot. And I feel like there's almost like an AI fatigue where people are here, AI this, AI that, and it, without really understanding what it does. So AI obviously stands for artificial intelligence. The idea is that you can now actually use technology to generate new content. And so before AI really came out, so if we're talking 2-3 years ago, you can use models to predict the, you know, you can create basic algorithms to actually like create prediction models, but you couldn't actually generate new content. And so that's been this very big technological shift. And so for those of you that use ChatGPT, you ask ChatGPT a question, it generates an answer. So it creates something that wasn't created before. And that's, you know, when you get down to it, that's all AI actually is. It's creating new content. And so what we're able to do at Finny is actually use AI to feed into it all this information that's out there on the internet about, you know, consumers and data around trends and social media. And then we're able to actually help match consumers to financial advisors. And so the best example I have for this is, let's say you're a dentist in Tennessee and you are looking for a financial advisor. Finny can actually go in and match you to someone who specializes in working with dentists, maybe who are thinking of selling their practice, maybe match you with someone who went to the same school as you, likes to golf as well, someone you'll actually really get along with. And so we're able to use AI to actually predict that match because we're able to take in all this information that's out there and simplify it and then create these really straightforward predictions.
And you pull from, give them an example of the kind of data and how detailed the data can be.
Yeah, it gets a little creepy, I won't lie. So we get data, so think of it from the internet, so publicly available sources, so social media, public political records, property records, charitable contributions, interests. We even work with a lot of private and proprietary data vendors that get things like cookie data, which means we're actually able to say who's actually searching or Googling for things like a financial advice or planning or retirement, and then use that to match them with advisors too.
Yeah, so what you're basically doing, we talked about this dating profile where I told someone it's like a dating profile and they thought it was a dating bill. But the financial advisor has a profile to start, correct?
Yep.
And then from there, we are reaching out looking for people that would be interested in connecting. And one of the reasons, you know, this is what I know. I know this for a fact, that if you put together a team of professionals, and I say that if you have a doctor you trust, you have an attorney, you have a CPA, you have a financial advisor, you got somebody even a personal trainer, whatever. In my case, I've got a golf coach, okay, that I trust. When you do that, what you're doing is you're drawing from experts in things that you're not going to be as good at. Mm-hmm. I had a guy one time, I did a seminar, and I had this doctor. He says, I do all my own money. I said, I understand. Anytime I get sick, I just Google it, okay? And, you know, like, God, come on. You're spending your whole day doing something else, and you're going to know more than me? No, not going to happen. And so we go out and we do that, and what you guys are doing is taking it one step further and saying, let's get with somebody that we actually like, you know, that we believe have a lot of the same beliefs and things like that. And that's what this AI can do. Victoria?
100%. And that came actually from our own direct experience. So to echo Dr. Wilson's point, we are solving a problem we're really passionate about because it was our own problem. When Ed and I went out to look for a financial advisor, all the tools out there would just match us with people that we had nothing in common with.
Right.
In fact, oftentimes we didn't even get to decide who we would select. They would just take our leads and take us as a lead and sell us across to multiple advisors. When in reality, who we ended up working with was a woman a little closer to our age who actually specializes in fintech founders. So, yeah, that just speaks for the personalization.
Yeah, if somebody, you know, last night we were at dinner and one of the guys had was at dinner, he was a 5 handicap. And, I'm like, all right, we can talk this. We talk golf the whole time. Now, he was an advisor, but the point being is, I got a lot of my clients that by just happenstance, you know, we have a lot in common, you know, but it would be much better if I could have people that were always like that,
yep,
you know, to start with. And so, Josh, talk about, you know, we talked about some of the biases and stuff like that that you were starting on.
Yeah, I mean, before we talked about your network, your family, the folks that you may not get the support from that you're expecting, and how that can be a struggle. The other thing I tell people to expect is understand that your brain is wired to maintain a status quo. So you have a long-term wiring. Your brain is being wired from the time you're a baby.
Comfort zone.
Exactly. So you get into your comfort zone, you get your status quo of what you're used to. And so your brain is really wired to kind of maintain what it's used to just kind of exist, keep going. So you actually have to expect that your brain does something that's called confirmation bias. We look for things that confirm what we already believe. We look for things that confirm our status quo. When we look at information, if it fits our current worldview about ourselves, about what we're capable of, we are actually going to weigh that information as being better and more important. And we can do that to our own detriment.
Right.
So we're actually not just looking at our network and, hey, people aren't encouraging me. I've got to have to change the way I talk to myself and doubt my own brain. Hey, I tell people, talk to your brain. Hey, this wiring doesn't benefit me. It may be the way I grew up. It may be the way I think about myself right now. But if it doesn't benefit me, it may be time to leave that behind. And sometimes that maybe even mean writing that down on paper. So you see it. Now you're taking just a thought and putting visual energy, kinetic energy behind that. And it can really be powerful to people to understand, I do not accept this about my brain wiring, about the way I was grew up, about my expectations for my world. So this changing of a mindset is just understanding, hey, I am wired to pursue a certain thing, to believe certain limitations about myself. And there's no woo-woo stuff about this.
Right.
You know, this is just your brain.
You think about it. I mean, I play competitive golf, and there are, 100 people in the world that make real big money playing golf. So why would anybody try to do that?
Right.
Why would you do that? I mean, you've got no chance. Yeah, you do. Somebody does, right? And so you have to take a risk, number one, and also what you just said, I call it a GPS, and I always tell people that you get in your Uber, all right, and you tell them where you get your map out, and it says go here, go here, go here, and your goal is here, and you will get here at this time, all right? And so it's your goal to begin with, your big picture, what's your big picture? Your plan, how are we going to get there, and when is the deadline, the schedule? So that's the GPS, and I use that as your financial model. It's like when I meet with people, I say, hey, if you were to quit today, how much do you need per year to live good? And they say $100,000. I say, okay, well, you need $2 million. That's 20X, so we need $2 million. And you're 40 years old. You've got $100,000 saved. All right, well, now we got to look out. We said, no, wait a minute, it's going to cost more 20 years from now, so it's going to be double. There we go, we got that. So now you need $4 million, and you got $100,000. That's your goal. We got your goal now. Your plan, we're going to have this automated, and it's $1,672 a month at 9%. And your schedule 20 years from now, you're going to hit it. How about that? And that's the way you put it on paper, and which you guys have done. So give me the picture of what it's going to look like when you guys hit what you're planning on doing.
That's a conversation we have nearly every day.
I was going to say Adam's favorite question.
My favorite question.
We got 2 minutes, by the way.
Well, I would say, so we're in a very privileged position where we're young. We have a lot more years before we potentially need to retire, and we don't have a mortgage. We don't have set expenses. And so we are able to take that big risk. And so for us right now, we're able to really reinvest every single dollar we're getting, take low minimal salaries and just reinvest our time and our energy and our money back into this company, hoping that maybe in 5-10 years, we'll see an exit. And for us, it was the highest leverage use of our time at, 25 to quit our jobs and do this, because the math that we did was, hey, if this blows up in 5 years, we'll be 30 and we'll have a great story and a great experience, right? And so I'm aware that not everyone can take that level of risk and reinvest every single dollar. But last year we raised about $4 million. I think potentially this year we'll go out to raise some more money, and we'll keep growing the company. And our goal, if we're going to be honest, is to take this company public one day and, swing big and make this into a massive financial services company. But that's our long-term plan.
So we met about, 4 or 5 months ago,
yeah,
something like that. And I was like, these guys, they got this thing cooking. We got about 20 seconds. So last.
I was going to say, yeah, it's more scary than it is hard starting a company. And with a right plan, it doesn't need to be scary.
Yep. That's it. I mean, when you think about, I've always said you get paid for what you know and what you do. All right. You had some great background. You were coding what? How long?
I was coding since I was 14 years old.
14 years old coding. And you're what, 20?
I'm 26 now.
26 now. I mean, guys, if you're young out there or you've just been out there not taking a chance, you need to start thinking about it. What we'll do, if you go to RoyMatlockJr.com, we're going to put these guys' links to the website and great information. We will be right back next week talking money. Once again, my name is Roy Matlock Jr. Thanks for listening.